In the name of one God, Holy Trinity. Amen. So for the last couple of weeks, the gospel lessons we've had from Luke have opened up for us this long, slow, hard, loving work of restoration. They, through some wild tales like the one about the man possessed by a legion of demons, and through some fairly obscure teaching, let the dead bury the dead, they have pointed us toward Jesus working to connect humanity back to both God and one another. The vision Jesus puts forth is certainly one of interdependence. To be clear, these stories aren't talking about quarreling friends making up so that things might be smooth or go the way you or I need or expect them to go. The stories are about restoring people to one another so that each of us might live in the utterly inefficient capital K kingdom where God, who we know to be love, calls the shots. This capital K kingdom is not dispossessed of self, but the self, the unique expression of who you are and who I am, is not the unit by which we measure energy or progress here. Rather, things are defined by whatever it is that connects them one to another. Love rules the day in this place Jesus is referencing, and he also knows it's counter the culture. It was then. It is now. And since it's counter the culture, we need a little help. We need a little instruction. How do we do it? Which way do we go? Where do we start? How would we know when we get there? It's confusing. Jesus knows that. And he's giving us some direct advice, but maybe not quite as direct as we hear it. That's what we get from Luke's Jesus this morning in this gospel. Luke's Jesus is laying out a plan. He builds his base of followers first. Then he adds 70 to the number, and he makes it clear that nobody's in on this thing alone. You're going two by two. Connection is key here. And then he makes this point, the harvest is plentiful and the laborers are few, he says. This is not going to be easy. And he advises them, ask the Lord of the harvest to send more laborers. If you need help, ask for it. So what's happening here, we ask ourselves, in this story, in this church? In business, we'd call it scaling, right? Sometimes churchy folk like us hate when other churchy people use business terms to represent church mission. I just remind those churchy people that the root of our word economy, oikos and nomos, come from the same word tree as this word for the community that Jesus is building, the koinonia. So Jesus is scaling this movement now. He's intent upon building the capital K kingdom by restoring humanity. After the ask the Lord of the harvest to send more laborers, he gets practical. Get out there. It's going to be hard. See, I am sending you out like sheep in the midst of wolves. You don't need anything. You don't need anything other than yourselves. Your asset in this mission is your heart. And that's pretty heavy duty. It's risky. It's deep. So just for the sake of clarity here, Jesus doesn't say, go into your room, shut the door, take a knee, swear your allegiance, and we're done. He is far more demanding than that. He says, in effect, out of the stands and onto the playing field. He's expecting his team, his community, his koinonia, his church to spread some love. And to be fair, and I'm sure I'm glad about this, to be fair, he expects that not everyone will be down. Not everyone will be into this. He gets a little Kenny Rogers on us. He says, you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them. What I want to make certain we don't miss here is that he is being very practical. It's important for us as a church to have a sense that there's a very practical side to this love spreading that we do. Maybe it's a casserole after an operation, a visit with communion. It could be a little help with a light bill. It might be a jacket hanging on a tree with a tag that reads, if you need me, take me. Probably it's feminine hygiene products in the high school or the middle school available for a kid who needs them, or quarters for a washing machine when you've just paid your rent. This love work becomes practical. The theoretical, mystical work of restoring people settles in around a couple of cups of coffee and a table and a listening ear or a grocery store gift card. The work is embodied almost always. 99.5% of the time. And then there's this gentle, practical advice of, hey, and I'm paraphrasing here, paraphrasing Jesus. Hey, if the coffee doesn't work out with him, then it might work out with somebody else. Certainly, there's somebody else who could use a cup of coffee and an ear. Move on. Keep your eyes open. Use your heart. It's your missional asset. I've been coming around to thinking these last several months that part of the problem is that in the West, we've been overthinking this religion thing. We've been overthinking it and underfeeling it. We've accidentally, and with the best of intentions, reduced faith, religious faith, to belief. And faith is so much more than belief. Faith, religious faith, is so much more than belief. It likely includes belief, but it doesn't necessarily demand the order, right? Faith to me is that fullest expression of inclusive love that reveals the identity, the work, and the personhood of God in a moment in time right before our very eyes. Faith is now. Faith is a present experience, so much more than belief, even if it includes it. I stumbled upon the most beautiful story about faith this week, or at least about faith as I've just defined it. A story about mission, a story about restoration, a story about love. I saw it on Ruth Glass's Facebook page. And I just, you know, I can hardly get through this story. I probably won't be able to without bursting into tears. It's just so beautiful. I practicing it this morning. Sometimes it happens where I'm working on my sermon early in the morning and I get very weepy at 6:09 in the morning. I'm not sure if it's the sermon or if it's just I'm really tired. I'm not quite awake yet. And then I try to pull it off at 8 by just sucking it up and telling the story, but it just comes out. It's so beautiful. It struck me, there was a photograph of a man on a gurney in the middle of a forest. And there were a few other people in the photograph too. Maybe you've seen this. There were a couple of guys who you could see quite obviously were EMTs. And one EMT had his hand on this man's face, the man who was on the gurney in the forest, on his cheek like this in a very loving way. The other guy, you couldn't really figure out what he was doing in the photograph. His back was to the camera, and the picture is unusual in this sense that there's this man in the gurney in the forest, but the scene wasn't traumatic. In my mind, I think when you see a man on a gurney in the forest, and there's some serious trauma happening, and there's probably a helicopter that's not far away. But that wasn't the scene here. The man, though clearly not well, he has that look of a dying person, but not a bloodied, busted up guy, just old, or maybe ill. In the photograph, you can see that he's frail, and he doesn't have good color. And the photograph captured my attention. It was unusual. So I went to the story, and I read the story attached to the picture. I learned that the scene depicted the dying wish of a forest ranger. The ranger had been suffering from crippling, turning to fatal multiple sclerosis. And his dying wish was to get back to the forest, to spend some time in creation, to spend some time with creatures, to spend some time with himself, to reconnect to that place where he played such a central stewardship role in his professional and in his personal life. He'd been separated from the forest for many years as he declined. And as he neared death, he just wanted to go to the forest one more time. So a hospice nurse and a chaplain and forest rangers reached out to the EMTs who volunteered their time and equipment to take this forest ranger on one last stroll or roll through the forest. The story said 7 firefighters, a nurse, and a hospice chaplain took the ranger on a 3-hour roll through the forest. They stopped by a babbling brook so the ranger could hear the water on the rocks. They paused at each vista so he could take it all in. They picked flowers from the ground and bark from the side of trees and held it to his nose so that he could smell the forest one last time. The story reports the forest ranger patient was smiling the whole time and talking about how happy this pilgrimage was making him feel. And I could barely read to the end of the story through my tears. Here's why. Maybe we can't always figure a way to get ourselves there. Maybe we don't always do the best job of activating, of putting ourselves out there in love. Maybe sometimes we get intimidated about whether we're doing this religion thing right. And so we get stuck, and we don't intend to get stuck. Well, I can tell you one thing. I can tell you one thing about love. I can tell you one thing about restoration. I can tell you one thing about faith. You sure know it when you see it. When you see 7 firefighters, a nurse, and a chaplain rolling a dying ranger through a forest on a gurney and stopping to smell the roses, well, that's it. That's it. That's it. That's exactly what it looks like. That's the capital K kingdom. That's the kingdom of heaven come near. That's what Jesus is describing. That's what Jesus is encouraging us toward. So if it's a pew, or a sermon, or a robe, or a reading, or a song, or a ritual that gets you there, well then, let's use them. And if any of these things ever get in the way of a gurney rolling through a forest, then let's drop them. Church, the capital K kingdom has come near to us. And we have some more love to spread. Let's get on it. Amen.